right here on Radio 3. That is called In the Dark. Let's say hi to Morris from St Kilda, live. How are you, Morris Mizalowski?
Happy Tuesday to you. Very, very good, thank you.
Great. Well, I wondered if we could get through today without mentioning those two letters, A and I, and I'm thinking, eh, probably not.
You already have.
You know what I mean. No caveat in that one. But the point is, today, I'm thinking December, you know, get into a bit of Christmas stuff. Are toys actually still a thing? Or bizarrely, are they still considered childish these days? Everybody's kids are so high-tech. Toys, you know?
From what I can tell, anecdotally, having a grandchild now and seeing lots of kids around her and also looking at what's happening around, I think toys are more popular than ever.
Oh.
Despite what we hear about children being plugged in all the time, I think that kids, parents, I mean, kids really don't have any choice when they're that young. It's really the choices their parents make for them.
Yeah.
I think that what's happening, in fact, I know what's happening, is that parents now feel that they have to keep their children away from the devil for as long as possible.
I think so. The reason I bring this up, Morris, is because in 1994, today, in Japan, the PlayStation was released. What is it? 2014, 20, 30 years ago, the PlayStation.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it? Incredible. I mean, that was a change in the way that we played and what we played on significantly. I mean, that really took us into the electronic world. It's hard today to think about it because we're so readily there and it's so ordinary. We just sense that we plug in, or we have something that's battery operated, we use our phone now or whatever. But they were huge strides forward then, and the games we played were really extraordinary for the time.
Are we in the era of retro? I mean, vinyl's an obvious one, but I saw somebody auctioning a PlayStation, funnily enough, on one of my mates, you know, online. Are they gimmicks or are they genuinely sort of back?
No, big time retro, big time. We spoke about a month or so ago,
yeah,
how retro generally across the globe is making a big comeback in everything, not just toys, but in anything that baby boomers used to have now that they've got a bit of coin in their pocket,
yeah,
and they're reaching an age where they want to collect their memories back. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're buying back their memories. You see a huge uptake in cars, old nostalgic cars from the 60s and 70s.
Talking about coin.
Roaring trade around the world. When you look at vinyl, you know, records, that's making a huge comeback. When you look at the way that people decorate their homes and the things they put in their homes, for the baby boomers, that's making a huge comeback in the sense of the decorations they choose and the things they want around them. Nostalgia is such a big playground now. It is enormous across every field, and in toys especially, because what you're finding now is that the toys the kids are playing with, again, chosen by their grandparents and their parents and the people around them, are very much nostalgic. It's quite extraordinary.
It's quite funny, isn't it, how years ago a common thing to happen was the grandparents weren't totally into how old the kid actually was, so they'd buy him a toy that was obviously way younger than was meant for them, and the kid would get indignant, etc. But that's what I'm on about, the nature of the toy, not what they are per se, but an important part of development. And has that gone?
No, in fact, it's a bigger industry than ever. What you're finding now is that young parents, people that are having kids now, are very, very much into what their kids should be playing with. And we're talking about from the age of zero,
yeah,
literally, from the moment they come out of their womb. You know, there's this big push around the world that young infants up to about 3 or 4 months shouldn't really be stimulated by anything except for black and white, because their brain, their eyes and their receptors really aren't used to having more than that, and we're overstimulating them. So there is a huge, literally, if you go into a toy store or an early learning establishment of any kind, you'll find that there's a whole shelf dedicated to black, white and toys that are specific to the age range. And then they go up another 3 or 6 months based on what that child is believed to be capable of, and the toys are specific to the needs of children of that age. And it just keeps going up and up, up and up, right, by age, Phil, really by categories of where the child's psychology, physiology, physically, mentally should be doing and how to stimulate them to get them to the next level.
I'm glad you mentioned that word, because I'm wondering when the stimulation, I suppose it would have been the 80s, started becoming through a screen, and you're stimulating them like at a physiological level. You're stimulating the eye cells, the brain cells, and people have argued that that's not always a good thing.
I would argue that we always thought it was a good thing. We just didn't like the way that perhaps we evolved into technology. That we always did. I mean, kids played with rocks, they played with sticks, they kicked the ball. Obviously not when they're born, but when they got older. You know, we did lots of things for them and with them to get them interested, to get them stimulated and playing. I don't know whether you remember back to the good old days, but Fisher & Price was a big thing when we
Oh, several brands.
When we,
yeah.
Yeah, when we had young kids, that was the brand, and that was seen to be educational. If you bought that, you were kind of saying, look, I'm taking a bit more care. That's made such a big comeback now. Fisher & Price kind of went into the doldrums for about 10 or 15 years, didn't disappear, but went into the doldrums, and now they are gone back into their kit. They're looking at the things they brought out in the 70s and 80s and rebuilding them and reselling them now to a much larger audience who just loves them.
Let's have a look at a list that you have. It's not your list yet, but I know you're working on one of some industry trends, really, for now and next year. Are you going to surprise us?
I'm not sure, but let's have a look at them anyway. Some of them will be quite obvious because they're the way that we've always gone and thought about what do we buy for our kids. One of the big trends around at the moment, and I'd say it's been around for a long time, this list was actually consolidated by a group of toy sellers around the world. It's an annual list they put together of what they believe in advance. So it was written about 6 months ago for what they believe will be popular this Christmas so that they're resellers can go and buy these things and stock their shelves in anticipation of people buying them. Okay. So that's the basis for this. So the advice they were giving their resellers was firstly, no surprise in this one, look to the movies, look to the franchises that are out there and look at what toys are coming out with them. And that has become a really big space for toy resellers this year.
Well, that's old school and aspirational, so that's got to be reasonably good.
Yeah, absolutely. Disney Plus apparently is killing it at the moment. I mean, Disney was always popular, but now it has Disney Plus. It's not just relying on the cinemas. It's actually beaming in to people's lounge rooms. Yeah. So there's an even bigger push, a more daily, regular push for kids to want those toys and for parents to say, here's a toy for the game you play. One that I hadn't considered when I had read this, it's obvious, was that Netflix has actually become a big player in this.
Oh, yeah.
That Netflix has formed lots of profitable partnerships with companies like Mattel and others in looking at what they put on their TV that can be sold onto the toy shelves, and then again have this double whammy of course the toy sell is doing well because the brand's been extended into a physical something.
Yeah.
But also then, of course, as kids always do when they have the toy in front of them, they want to go back to the screen and watch that thing again. So Mighty Express is one of the Netflix ones.
Can I just chuck something in before I forget?
Yeah, go for it.
The one thing that is sort of sent us into a great big, if you know when sound feeds back, a big loop, is in fact Barbie, because the doll Barbie came out in 1959.
Yeah.
And it's been a massive part of so many little girls' upbringing, and now it's metamorphosed into something huge.
It has, but it kind of waned again. It never disappeared, ever, ever. But last year, don't forget, there was the big movie, the big push.
That's what I mean, because of that.
Yeah. And the big movie last year literally just kicked it into the hemisphere again, just literally made it take off. And that was extraordinary. And that's what we're seeing. Toys have always sold through movies or through shows and vice versa. But now there's that big push again. And interesting that we have so many online players now, not only in Netflix and Disney and Prime and others, but also we're seeing a whole lot of new spaces where kids are playing, and those things are becoming toys and vice versa as well. So really that merchandising is the first big advice that they were giving to resellers.
Let's move on through this.
So the second one was something we've talked about already, which was the increased demand for classic toys. And we've seen that for the last few years. Again, for the reasons that we've spoken about, kids that are playing with them obviously haven't seen them. They think that they're brand new. And their parents and grandparents get a great thrill, as do we, watching grandkids playing with these supposedly old toys that have become new again.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's really interesting when you sort of sit and think about this. So is that basically the pattern of life? They will not go away.
They won't go away. And not just the pattern of life, but really it's a grandparent thing, given the consumer that we have now. Really, people spending a whole lot of money on toys is a 1960s plus activity.
Yeah.
Before then, a child literally might have got a bear or a car or a train, and that was pretty much it for their childhood.
That's
they were
right.
Made of metal. They were expensive. They were things that you had to save up a lot for. Christmas got you some smaller toys, but that was it. I mean, a toy was a really big thing that you gave a child. When there was no money around, you really had to make do, of course. And in the 60s and 70s, people began to have a little bit more disposable money. Toys were made a bit cheaper and a bit simpler, became more readily available, distributed. So when we talk about nostalgia, yes, there's a great push for toys that are 100 years old and that vintage. But they're not something you'd give a kid to play with. They're more something that you'd put away as an investment. So going back to the 60s and 70s is really the golden era of when this began. This is grandparents. It's prime grandparents, prime parents' time. In other words, I want my kids to have the same experience as I had. I'm going to go back and rebuy the same sort of thing.
Did the toy come with fewer caveats in the 70s and 80s and earlier? Because what number three on this list is environmental concerns take hold, and you just talked about metal. Did the toy come with fewer Easter eggs in the old days?
Yeah, absolutely. And less knowledge about the harm that it was doing. You know, good or bad, we can have that argument. But we were unaware, blissfully unaware of all the packaging. In fact, we loved the packaging. Kids love packaging, by the way. They love taking it apart and playing with it and seeing all those things. And we didn't really care much about what we put into the toys in the sense of plastics and others, because we used a great deal of plastics. Again, that conversation from a moment ago, we were trying to make them cheaper so we could make more of them. Plastic, vinyl, all those things were made that possible. We were using mould, we were using extrusion moulds, all kinds of things.
And nobody gave it a second thought.
And that was the chaser market.
All right, then. So let's move on through, because I do want to finish this one. Toy subscription services continue to soar. Can you give us a little ABC on that one?
I can. So what we've talked about up until now is buying and owning. You know, one kid, one toy, or a number of kids in the home, but it was my toy, you can't have it.
Right.
What's happened over the past few years is what's called toy subscription, or as we call it in Australia, toy rental.
Yeah.
Where you don't have to buy the toy, you can lease it, you can rent it. There are a number of services. One that's been around for quite a while is Whirly, whirli.com. It doesn't play into Australia. I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure it doesn't play into Hong Kong. But there are a lot of examples of where you can go online, you can choose a toy, see what you want. They deliver it out. You kind of rent it for a period of time and send it back. If you want to keep it, there's a price for keeping it and keep it. What's happening here, and again, this is firsthand anecdotal, is I'm seeing a lot of toy libraries opening up in our local areas. Our community groups have them.
That's
where
good.
Where parents get together. And this has been going for a while. This is like 20, 30 years, where parents come together. It's a voluntary service, often run by a community, by our local council or somebody who give the space. They will put toys and other activities into that space. Parents take time to join the committee, and each one does a couple of hours. Parents turn up once or twice a week, other parents, and they take the toy away for a couple of weeks, and you rent it and bring it back. It's kind of this circular economy. And that's why it's become important again, this word circular economy, because a great number of parents saying, look, my kid loves the toy, but after 3 months or 2 months or a couple of weeks, they're over it. It could go back into somebody else's hands and they could have joy from it as well. So these toy subscriptions, circulars, circular economies, rentals, whatever you call them, are definitely doing the rounds now, and I think are a great service for a whole lot of kids who, face it, really are over the toy within a month or two normally.
Well, that is an actual fact. The next one's interested, addicted to unboxing, and that's got multi uses, because it becomes a toy for your cat as well to destroy.
Yeah. This came as a bit of a surprise to me. It was something I wasn't aware of. It goes back to what I said before about kids loving boxes. You know, often they like the box more than they like the toy. There is this great phenomenon over the last few years where what is believed to happen for a great number of children, and certainly for adults, is actually the unboxing. Yeah. Is the not knowing what's inside
Absolutely.
Of it, and getting a box, you know, beautifully wrapped with ribbons and all kinds of adornments on it, and you literally just tear this thing apart or do it slowly, whatever takes your fancy, and it's kind of like a guessing thing all the way through. There are a number of toy companies that have played into this, and they are now, for this purpose, environmentally safe, they claim. In other words, they're using brown paper, they're using no plastics.
Yeah.
But what they've done is they've said, there's a great thing inside, and you know what it is because you've purchased the Barbie doll or whatever it is, so you know what's inside. It's not a surprise to you, the giver, but to the person that's getting it, they are getting this incredibly wrapped event that takes some time and pleasure and activity to unwrap. So one of the big things that the toy resellers were saying was that if you don't buy them this way, in other words, if some of the toys don't come this way, pre-boxed and ready to unwrap with a whole lot of fun around it, maybe it's something you could offer as an additional service. Not just the wrapping, but actually turning the unwrapping into an event itself.
Morris, can you spare me 5 more minutes? Because we've got to stop for the news. Have you got a few minutes here?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Jolly good. Let's go, because I want to get to the end of this list. And the conclusion I'm sort of drawing is, I think, quite optimistic. But back in a second. Sit tight, Morris.
Double. Radio 3.
Okay, Morris, let's just carry on. We're talking about a top 7 random, 7 list of toy trends for 2024-25. I think this is sort of oiling Morris's wheels for when he comes out with his undoubtedly more detailed one. We got to number 5, 6. 6 is interesting. Tech toys getting more advanced. And I'm thinking, well, in a more simplistic way, they were in the 80s too.
They are. You're absolutely right. But tech, as we talk about all the time, is all around us now. And even though there is this big push not to give young ones up till too much advantage over tech, in other words, don't show it to them very much or get them to use it at all, what we're finding, of course, is that those that are a bit older and who are allowed through their parents and those around them like some kind of tech around them with their toys. We're talking about the old robots that we used to have, you know, really basic, simple things. There's a robot doing the rounds, apparently called Dash and Q.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another robot called Miko, M-I-K-O-3, that is much more expensive than all the others. But those kind of tech toys are apparently making it onto the shelves. There's a company called Emotix, E-M-O-T-I-X, mm-hmm. that's raised about $80 million in the past 6 months, and they have a toy called Osmo that is a blend of hands-on experience and tech. So kids do something. It's got a tablet, and it's also got physical game pieces. So kids might have a piece in front of them, a physical piece in their hand. They put it on a tablet, which is like an iPad, but it's not, of course, and that then triggers something to happen either in the physical piece or on the tablet.
Give me a retro comparison off the top of your head. I mean, I'm sure there were.
I don't know. There must have been.
You know, the sort of robot you would program, obviously, many, many years ago. But I'm trying to keep it. I'm just trying to ask you, is this still in the realm of toys, I think?
Yeah, this absolutely is, because this Osmo is used in 30,000 schools around the world.
Okay.
It is growing phenomenally. It's actually used as a teaching aid. You know, you'll put this little object on top, which might be a giraffe, on top of the tablet, and all of a sudden the giraffe is in the jungle, and it's doing things that a giraffe might do, and the kid can see it, and then the giraffe goes over to somewhere, and you put another piece like a rhinoceros on it, and it does things then.
So it's game, that kind of interactive. Teaching and toy.
Yeah, interactive, and does a bit of spelling, apparently, and very, very apparently good for children, and has become for a number of schools something that they use to help to teach.
Good for children. I mean, that doesn't always crack it on Christmas Day, does it? I mean, your average kid many years ago wanted a chopper, the bicycle, which could kill you with a single thought. And so mum and dad buy you a bike that's way more sensible, but then you get duffed up at school because you haven't got a chopper.
Yeah, exactly. So tech toys are definitely getting a bit more advanced in that one. And the last of them, number 7, which leads on from that,
yeah.
is that parents now increasingly are looking for toys, not all, but a number of toys that they buy to actually be educational. And you can't see, but I got my fingers, you know, doing the quote, the air quote thing, educational to whatever level that is. But they want their children to be able to learn. That's by either using it or learning something from it or somehow gaining more than just the temporary experience of having played and then ended it.
I think that's always been a thing, actually, hasn't it? I mean, there were even
Absolutely
certain brands yes. of toys that were sort of specifically educational. Of course, your mum and dad wouldn't let you see that word, but they were.
Yeah. Yeah, the Fisher-Price is a good example of that going back. But predominantly now it is very on trend to say this toy is educational. It doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. It's a bit like organic. You don't really have to prove it. It just sounds good for it to be it.
Yeah, all right then. So, I mean, this list is just about to reach its conclusion, and I'm thinking about we all know about the Aussie under-16 law and all that sort of thing. Is too much exposure to that kind of stuff possibly removing good old-fashioned youth toy time?
I don't think so. I know I hear it often, Phil, and we've talked about it. I don't think it's as bleak as everyone makes out. I do not believe children are plugged in to their equipment all of the time as this makes out. In fact, not anecdotally, but we know empirically that, again, this is Australia-specific, that we have more kids involved in competition sports than we've ever had before in all of our records, that it is getting extremely difficult for kids to get into basketball and netball and swimming just because there are so many kids playing it. We have Aussie Kick, which is AFL, our brand of football here. AFL Aussie kids have just gone through the roof with membership, boys and girls.
Why so?
Because it goes against the notion that we believe, which is why I had my big rant a couple of weeks ago about social media, that's all that kids do. Kids do not do that. They do it as a part of their life. They don't do it as all of their life. And this is not true for every kid, of course. Some kids are sportier. Some like going out. Some don't, of course.
And they're not all like black web fiends, are they? They're just kids.
No. But we just know, we do know by the numbers of people that are participating. We know that libraries, for instance, have become really popular again. I was in the library the week before, and the librarian of the kids section said that that's gone gangbusters now. Kids are coming back for story time. They like to take out books. There are lots of kids going back. I think it's a reaction to COVID in some ways.
Maybe.
Where kids were stuck inside and parents were stuck inside with them. So the last year or two, parents have been really active about going back out, going to libraries, going to play sports, going to do all the sorts of things. And kids have had really good experiences of that sort of thing as well in the last few years. So they're definitely taking it up. I'm not for a moment saying kids don't play games online, but you know what? I was brought up in front of a television and a radio too, and that was supposed to be the end of all time. Social media, of course, goes further, but kids still play toys.
What you're saying is, in fact, the Aussie that's kind of cool to hear about. It's not what we've been listening to in the news, because you're quite right. There hasn't been a medium ground with all of this under 16 shenanigans, has there?
It hasn't.
Evil. It's out to get you. Your kids are consumed. And Morris is saying, well, actually, it's not really as bad as that.
What we're railing against, and what we absolutely agree with, and you didn't hear me say a word against it a couple of weeks ago, Phil, was the evils of social media once kids are on it and they're trapped.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible. I mean, you know, I know that's not what we're talking about. So that, not for a moment, is a bad thing. Yes, I think kids spend too much time, or anecdotally might spend too much time, on these devices. But I go back to, in my day, that terrible saying that you want to say when you're a vintage, my day. We stuck kids in front of televisions and videos and did all kinds of things. The difference is now that kids have a little discrete unit that's their own, and they can hide in the corner. Yeah. And that's, I think, is the bad part of all of this. Before, at least, it had to be done communally, which is why when I talked about social media, I still believe that kids should do that in a common area, you know, like a kitchen or somewhere where they can be supervised and seen. They shouldn't have devices that they scurry away like little rats and play on. I don't hold that for a moment, but there are still kids doing great things outside, still kids getting really good times from their toys, and kids playing with electronics.
Let's check out the conclusions as in this article. Would you just go through it and say whether you agree or not?
So the conclusion for this article, says he, trying to find the last
one. I'll give you
pages.
The first one. Environmental concerns, new products, emerging tech developments seem to be driving key changes in the industry. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, I like the next paragraph, and then I'll combine both if I can.
Yeah.
It says, old toys getting 21st century makeovers is a proven sales strategy that shows promise for the next few years. And I think both of those things are very true. We spoke about the fact that these toys are being paid for by parents and grandparents, and they want nostalgia. They want to hearken back to what they did in the past. They also like the notion of being able to say, my kid is not addicted to social media or screens. They're playing with the same things I played with. And that is part of the vernacular. Even if they're not saying it overtly, they're saying it covertly by buying these toys. And yes, all of us, I think many of us, perhaps all of us is too much, but many of us do look at the packaging, the wrapping of toys, and think it's overwrapped and we'll stay away from them. The toy manufacturers themselves have been really careful and deliberate about not over packaging anymore, about being really deliberate about it and being mindful about how these waste. You know, the big thing in all of this, Phil, is actually not the packaging at all.
Oh, yeah.
It's the toys themselves. 90%, and that's a figure pulled from somebody's statistics, but 90% of the toys that we own are not recyclable in any way. The old plastics
and things. They can't be, can they?
They just can't be. So it's actually not the packaging, which is terrible, and yes, we should be mindful of that, but the toys themselves are not recyclable, and that's a bigger issue, I'm told, than all of this other all of these other peripheral issues.
Well, this is where the toy library idea is so genius.
Yes, and I think it is. I've seen it firsthand for many decades. It's actually a very joyous place too. It's nice to see families that come in often with the young kids, and the kids will scurry around and play and take something, and then be able to take it home, and the parents get to talk to each other. It's a really great community activity.
All right, Morris. Well, that was brilliant. I'm glad we had a bit more time today. Jared's busy being a professional Aussie somewhere else. But it's nice to see this through. How far are you off doing something similar, and will it go into different avenues that you maybe don't agree with?
It will. Mine's going to be broader. I do an annual list that we talk about normally around this time last year. It's an annual list of the trends that are going to come up with 2025. I've chosen to delay that into next year now, and I'll bring it out in January. But we can do an advance list because I like you so much, Phil.
Oh, thanks.
We can do an advance list if you like for next week. But my main piece will be out in mid-January now.
Right. So I went into today thinking, oh my goodness, the youth are getting poisoned by screen. You know, the stuff we're hearing in the news coming out of Aussie, etc. But talking to you today, toys will be toys and kids going to play.
Kids love to play with toys. They absolutely adore it. I know that they might go into the dark side once or twice. And parents are, on the whole, very deliberate about trying to put things in front of their children that are mindful and useful for them. And again, money comes into it as always, which is why I like that we spent some time talking about that circular and toy libraries.
Nice one. MorrisFuturist.com if you want to find out more of his rambler, his wisdom. We'll catch up next week, eh?
Looking forward to it. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Morris Misolowski, live from Aussie.